Hi, everybody. Dennis Prager here. Now, this should be, well, it is a fireside chat, but it has no fireside and no Otto, which is very painful. But you will understand why. It's a statement of how important I consider my guest that I would forego a fireside and Otto. But the good news is we have Otto merchandise. They thought here at PragerU, this is where we are, as opposed to my home, they thought of PragerU that, Dennis, you would really push Otto merchandise? And I thought, yeah, I would. Because everybody loves them. People stop me at airports and they don't go, hi, Dennis. They go, how's Otto? Which is painful. It's not. I really get a kick out of it. Anyway, we have an Otto mug and we have Otto socks, which are high quality. Is that correct? Oh, yes. And that's all at the PragerU store. I just wanted everybody to know. But that's the reason we don't have the usual here. So every week I share with you some thoughts. I will, and then I will go immediately to my guest. I wrote a column this week, my weekly column, on the new thing, which is to spell black with a capital B. And I will deal with that at greater length about the absurdity of it, that to make a color into a proper noun, as if there is such a thing. And white, of course, is not capitalized. And the Associated Press, which is the Bible of style for journalists, said, well, the problem is that whites don't share anything, whereas blacks share culture and identity, which is it's just absurd. And then they don't want to give solace and comfort to white supremacists. So the only reason I'm raising this is as a great segue to my guest, who needs no introduction for 99.9% of you, even those of you, of course, watching outside of the United States. Sarah Huckabee Sanders was the press secretary for President Trump. And she has a very wonderful book out now, Speaking for Myself. And I, being an author, know there is nothing worse than appearing on any program and the host does not mention the book. It's annoying, isn't it?
It is. So I'm very grateful that, one, you're sitting down with me. And I hope I can be at least a halfway good of substitute as Otto. I know I don't measure up, but hopefully we can still have a little fun even without Otto here.
Otto doesn't say much. I have to say that. In fact, the truth is, Otto doesn't do much, which is a problem unto itself. Anyway, I'm really delighted to be with you. I very rarely have guests on the Fireside Chat. It's really between those folks and me. But it gives you an idea of how much I admire you that we've done this. So
Thank you.
I did want you to know that. And I'd like to tell you why I admire you. It's not because you're famous. Famous doesn't mean a thing to me. I have a great saying I think you'll love. The famous are rarely significant, and the significant are rarely famous.
Oh, that's great. That's wonderful.
Isn't it true, though?
Yeah.
You know, when you think of who's famous out there, I mean, what does it mean a thing? But you're significant and famous, but the reason is, as I told you on my radio show, your courage. It's the rarest of the good traits. And you have that. I mean, to go out there every day in front of the media, whose only purpose was to mock you and the president. And the proof is the way they speak to Joe Biden. The questions to Joe Biden are, why don't you like the president? How come the president is awful? Why are you wonderful? Right? I'm not exaggerating.
It's truly astonishing that he's running to be the leader of the free world and nobody's asking anything hard of him.
What I think of when I think of the media is sheep. Am I being too harsh?
Not at all. They're not just sheep, but they're lazy. And if one person runs with a story, whether it's accurate or not, sometimes they don't even bother to check. They basically just push it out and say, according to so-and-so, and, you know, the New York Times runs a story, then everybody else follows and says, according to the New York Times, you know, Dennis Prager is the worst human on earth. Okay, well, if they said it, then everybody will write it. And it's unbelievable that there's no accountability in journalism.
The first day you showed up as press secretary for President Donald Trump, did you have as low an opinion of the media as you do today?
It was a gradual process.
Really?
But it happened pretty quick. So,
right.
You know, certainly I think I came in a lot more optimistic into the White House, but I worked under Sean Spicer as the deputy for a few months before becoming the press secretary. And I mean, every day you could just see it getting worse and worse. But by the time I left, the level of hatred and anger towards the president and everybody around him was so high from the mainstream media that it was hard not to have, you know, just the sense of total disregard for it. A lot of them.
Are our journalism schools producing this person, or is it impossible to advance if you just don't go along with the herd?
Well, I think a lot of it is you don't move forward if and you don't make a name for yourself. And so often now people in the media aren't trying to make their stories bigger. They're trying to make themselves bigger. And that is one of, I think, the biggest problems we saw, especially in the briefing room. One of the things that changed so much under Donald Trump is before his administration, honestly, people didn't watch the briefing from beginning to end. It wasn't must-see TV like it was in the Trump administration. And people found out, wait, if I get into a fight with the press secretary, I can have a viral moment and people will know who I am. I'll get book deals, speaking contracts. I become, you know, if I'm a print reporter, I can be a contributor on CNN. I don't know why anybody would strive for that, but some people do. And you saw them becoming somebody and not just the story being a big deal, but that individual being a big deal, at least in their own minds. And there was such a shift, I think, from when we first started to even now.
Do you think in their mind they are pursuers of truth or pursuers of quote-unquote social justice?
I think it depends. I think there's some good reporters out there that are still searching for truth, still searching for real news. But they get so, I think, pushed down because all of the other stuff gets amplified so much bigger than just a basic news story. It's just not exciting if it's not attacking the president or tearing somebody down and it doesn't have that kind of insider gossip, then it's just not as sellable. And so I think there's a little bit of both, but the negative is certainly far outweighing the straight
news. On a daily basis or not, did you leave your day's work and think, why am I doing this?
No. Because I knew why I was doing it. And the meaner and nastier and the more aggressive they got, the more important it became for us to stand strong and keep fighting back because we didn't want to lose to the liberal mob.
We are kindred spirits. We are. I have a piece up of many, you know, 20 years of columns. One of my columns years ago was How the Left Keeps Me Religious. And it's not, it was meant totally sincerely. They do. The people who loathe my values turn out to be unimpressive. And the more unimpressive they are, the more I believe my values are impressive. So I totally resonate to what you said. It actually strengthened you.
Yeah, and my faith got stronger. I became much more deep in my conviction of what I believed because I knew it was going to be challenged. And if I was going to be challenged, I had to be prepared to fight back. And so the harder they came at me, the stronger I felt like we got, both, you know, at home with my marriage, my family. I knew that I couldn't do it without them. And so that got stronger. My faith got stronger because I had such a dependence on that. And I got closer with the team that I worked on because I so depended on them that really all they did was embolden us to be better.
I'm happy to hear that for your sake and for the cause, as it were. Talking about your family, how old are your children?
8, almost 7, and 5.
Did they ever see a press conference?
They did. They actually attended a couple. The ones they attended were all kid briefings on Bring Your Kid to Work Day.
Oh, I see.
Got some great pictures of them hanging from the podium. They were generally unimpressed that their mom was the White House press secretary.
The purpose of children is to be humble.
Exactly.
I learned it. Every parent knows that.
On more than one occasion, one of my favorite stories, so my daughter, Scarlett, who's my oldest, she was about six. And she was going to her first father-daughter dance. And I'm so proud of her. I've spent all this time picking out the perfect dress, getting her hair done. She looks beautiful. I'm telling her how proud I am of her. She wanted to make a big entrance to my husband. And I get teary-eyed, like telling her that I'm so proud. You're such a sweet girl and smart and beautiful. And she looks up at me, and I think we're having a moment. And she taps me on the arm, and she goes, "It's okay, Mommy. One day you can be pretty, too." And I was like, ouch. Ooh, that one hurts. And so kids, 100%, will always keep you humble. And
I went on Politically Incorrect when my older son was about 11. I used to go a lot on Bill Maher's show. And I go, "David, you want to come with me?" "Nah, thanks, Dad. I'll stay home." "Fine." I come home, and he goes, "So who are the other guests, Dad?" I go, "I don't know, it's this rapper named Coolio." And he goes, "Coolio? You were with Coolio?" I went from Chopped Liver to "You were with Coolio."
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is. Yeah, my kids were totally unimpressed that I worked at the White House. But if I brought home, like, White House M&Ms, that was like a win. So
there's such a thing as White House M&Ms?
There are. Yeah, we'll make sure we get you some. I don't know if you'll be as impressed as my kids, but
That is adorable. So now let me talk to you about the Supreme Court. Were you press secretary during the Kavanaugh fiasco?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the meanness of the Democrats, of the left, forget that we disagree. It was just the meanness toward an utterly decent man. What are your thoughts? I mean, tell us from the inside what it was like.
I mean, it was truly disgraceful. So one of the moments that in some ways was very awkward but so necessary, so we did a murder board session with Judge Kavanaugh. And for several of us, it was one of the first or second times we'd really ever been around him. And I was playing Senator Feinstein. So I knew my job was to be, you know, not friendly. And we knew that there was nothing that was off the table for them to ask. We knew they would be so relentless. And here we were meeting him, somebody who is respected pretty much universally prior to being nominated as a Supreme Court justice by Donald Trump. And we're asking him about the most intimate details of his life. Unbelievably uncomfortable. And yet we knew it had to be done because the Democrats, there was no low too low that they wouldn't go. And so we had to have those moments with him. And watching him go through that process as a parent, watching him talk about his daughters and the impact of them, and hearing him tell in that hearing days later that his daughter had prayed for the people involved in the process was just heartbreaking. I mean, to see somebody, a good and decent person, get just absolutely eviscerated for no other reason than they hated the person that nominated them is not who we are as a country. And I think the Democrats were shameful in that process.
Do you think, I mean, I ask myself this question almost on a daily basis. Talking senators of the United States, do you think they believed that he was part of a rape line for gang raping?
No, you know they don't believe that. But not only did they perpetuate the lie, but so did the media. And they were so willing to destroy somebody so publicly because they wanted to hurt the president, they didn't care. And that is just, to me, mind-blowing that we've gotten to a place. I think you look at a kid like Nicholas Sandman. That, to me, is one of the most awful moments for the media. Have you ever thought that the media would become the type of institution that was happy to destroy a kid's life? I mean, when you sit back and really think about it, they were gleeful in running those clips because he had on a MAGA hat. They were happy to do what they could to destroy this kid's life. No matter what the cost, no matter who he was, they didn't care because they had their story and they couldn't wait to run it.
That is appalling.
And to think they haven't learned anything.
I don't expect you to answer this, but I want you to know another question I frequently ask myself. Do mean people go to the left, or does the left make people mean?
I don't know. Maybe it's both. Maybe they're mean
both.
Some are probably right. Mean to begin with, and some just get meaner when they get there. I don't know.
I can't imagine my side doing some of this stuff. The whole notion, by the way, of inquiring about high school activity when you have led an honorable life for 30, 40 years. You're religious, I'm religious. We believe in the rehabilitation. Even if you were an awful kid in high school, if you've led an honorable life, family, community, country, for all of your adult life, that's how we see you.
But that's not how they will paint you. But the difference is, and the hypocrisy of it, is they can be bad as adults and still get a free pass. I mean, you look at things, the governor of Virginia, total free pass. If that had been a conservative, a Republican that participated in the yearbook photos he did, it would never be in elected office. It would have been, you know, pushed far out. The things that women in power said about women in the Trump administration attacking our appearance, our fitness to be parents, our ability to make a pie, nothing was off limits. And everything was okay for them to attack. But if a conservative said that about a liberal, you would be the scum of the earth. You would never be on TV again. Yet as long as you do it to a conservative woman, it's perfectly acceptable and fine. And they're doing that as adults, not mistakes they're making as high schoolers.
So what are some of the big lessons you've learned from your unique, virtually unique experience in life?
I think one of the most important lessons for me, and one of the things that helped me survive some of the most difficult days, were knowing who I was before I ever walked into that room, and having confidence and a belief in something that was bigger than myself gave me the strength to get through the worst days possible. I think it's so important. I encourage young kids, know what you believe in and know who you are before you go out and try to take on the world, because you will get challenged. Even if you don't line up with my beliefs, know what yours are, because they're going to be challenged and you need to be able to defend them. You need to be able to talk about who you are as a person. And so for me, that was one of the biggest and most important things.
Any surprises about knowing the president when you came to know him?
You know, there were a lot of things that surprised me. One, he actually has a huge sense of humor. He's very fun to be around. A lot of people miss that. I think if you pay attention to him in rallies and stuff, you catch glimpses of it. But he has just a larger-than-life personality, but he's also a very generous person, and he can be very compassionate when he wants to be. And in moments where it calls for that, he steps up and rises to those moments. And getting to see him behind the scenes in some of the more difficult moments of being president, you see his heart and you see that side
of him.
Well,
he seems to have a preternatural strength. Most people in politics, even sharing his values, would have compromised, would have, not hidden themselves, but would have protected themselves, so to speak. His ability to endure this stuff and come back the next day is, as I said, preternatural.
I think most people, if they went through what he went through, day in and day out, would be curled up in the corner crying.
That's right.
And he only gets tougher. It kind of goes back to the harder you hit, the stronger he gets. and he just keeps fighting back. You would think they would learn after a little while, like, we can't take him down. Maybe we should try a different tactic, but maybe the left's just not that smart.
You know, you said about his compassion, so this will resonate, I'm sure. I've never met him, but I love the Trump Hotel, not because it's Trump. I just love the hotel when I'm in Washington. So my wife and I were there, and our waiter was a black guy. And I love strangers. I am the opposite of stranger danger. I'm stranger lover. So I just talk to everybody. So I said, and I like to talk real. So I said to him, you know, you work at the Trump Hotel. Most blacks are anti-Trump, or so we're told, and certainly anti-Republican. So how do your friends and relatives react to your working at the Trump Hotel? He said, no, it's actually not a big deal. And I said, And how do you feel about it? He said, well, I thought he'd say, look, you got to make a living. What do I care? I thought that would be a totally understandable answer. He said, to tell you the truth, I think the world of Mr. Trump. And I said, why? He said, because every time he comes here, he asks me about my family. That was a big deal.
Well, and he is somebody who has worked in the hospitality industry, and he very much is a caretaker. He, you know, you come into his office, he's like, let's get these people a Coke. Sarah, like, what are you doing? You can't just bring people in here without offering them something. Let's take care of people. He has such a take care of mentality from, I think, running hotels and being in that industry for so long. You know, you see that. He'll walk. I've traveled to a number of his properties with him. He knows everybody's names in the back kitchen, the doormen, the managers. He knows them.
Yeah,
he knows their families.
That was what I was told.
And it's not just one person at one property. It's not just D.C. I've literally been to places internationally with him at his properties, and he knows them all.
And that's a gift. I don't know all my relatives' names.
I don't want to know some of mine.
it's a painful admission. But he has that gift. Why did you name your book Speaking for Myself? Because you're no longer speaking for someone else?
Yeah, this was sort of a, you know, one of the reasons I wrote the book is because I was so tired of all of the stories and the negative about the president, that I wanted people to see the person that I got to see, but also my story and my life before I ever showed up at the White House. And a lot of people on the national stage know me as the person who spoke for Donald Trump, and this is my story and my version of my everyday with the president.
So are you sort of a heroine in Arkansas?
I don't know. I mean,
people see you in the street.
I think they like me there better than they did in D.C., so that's
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, so I'm saying, you know, I think walking into any given restaurant in are you near Little Rock?
I am. I'm in Little Rock.
Okay,
I haven't been asked to leave any restaurants in Arkansas.
Yeah, exactly.
So far, it's been knock on wood.
Well, you were asked to leave. In Washington or New York?
I was actually in Lexington, Virginia, so just outside of Washington.
And was it the owner?
It was the owner of the
restaurant. See, I want to know if there's an example of a conservative asking a member of the Obama administration to ever leave a restaurant. People must understand there is no symmetry here.
Yeah. There's no way that could have happened. Otherwise, we would never have heard the end of it because it would have been broadcast.
But it doesn't occur to us.
Yeah.
Just like, I don't know if you know this, I do from my radio show. The number of adult children who have stopped speaking to a parent because the parent voted for Donald Trump or supports Donald Trump, there is no example that I could think of. I won't talk to my parents because they voted for Barack Obama. First of all, we would consider that person a fool.
Right.
Excuse me, honor your father and mother doesn't come with the asterisk unless they voted the wrong way. So it's all of this meanness seems to be in one direction.
One of the examples, I was walking into my son's preschool class. He was three. I'm holding my three-year-old son's hand, and a mother who has a child also in the same class in front of my son tells me that I'm a horrible person, a despicable person, and then turns and spits on my car. The level of nastiness and anger is unprecedented. There's no person I can think of at all anywhere in the world that I disagree with so much that I would be so insulting another mother in front of them to spit on their car.
Mind blowing. Well, look, I have said to people for years, go with a MAGA bumper sticker in Santa Monica or San Francisco or Manhattan, and then go with a Biden sticker in the most conservative place in the country. See whose car gets marked up, gets a keyed.
I'll volunteer your vehicle for that. If you let me drive your car, I'll take it in.
You'll take your Biden vehicle, right? Yeah. I understand. No, exactly. We all know the answer to that. So do we have, what's our time frame, Megan?
26.
Oh, well, what should we do? Should we take a question or yes? Okay. So let's do our video question. I take normally questions in the middle of it, but this was too interesting. But here we go. Take it away.
Hello, my name is Allison Robison. I am 18 years old and I'm from Temple, Texas. My question for Sarah is, what was your favorite thing while working in the White House? And what piece of advice would you give to college-age conservatives? Thank you.
Got that?
I think so.
Okay.
So I would say, gosh, there's so many favorite moments. You know, one of them was putting the media in their place. You know, people always said, oh, I feel so sorry for you. I'm like, why? If I didn't love my job, I wouldn't keep doing it. But I loved the work I did. I loved working for the president. I considered every day I got to do that job a privilege and an honor. And, you know, fighting back with the media and making them feel ridiculous and showing the rest of the country just how out of control they had gotten was not all bad either. So definitely part of it. But I think getting to see America in such a different way, I got to travel literally all over the world with the president and meet people whose lives were really impacted by things that we were doing. That makes everything worthwhile. So hearing those stories gives you that extra boost every single day.
The president makes peace between two Arab countries and Israel. And you know what the New York Times described it as? Low-hanging fruit. Bahrain was low-hanging fruit. In other words, anybody in the White House could have done this. If the man discovered a cure for cancer, it would be dismissed as, well, it was inevitable, you know.
Yeah, at some point it had to happen.
Right, and it was imminent. Somebody else would have done it. He just took credit for it.
Yeah, I used to always say that if he, you know, walked across the Potomac, they'd say he can't swim. They hate him so much.
Okay, so let's end with this. I don't have an answer to this. In other words, I ask questions and I have my own thoughts. I don't have my own thoughts on this. Why do they hate him so much?
I think there's a number of reasons. I think one is that he went around them and he beat them. They said that there was no way he would ever win. If he won, he would destroy the economy and everything else in the country. And he hasn't done that. He actually built one of the strongest economies we've had. And he did it all without needing them. They constantly attack him. And he went around them. He spoke directly to the people and showed them that maybe they're not as powerful as they think they are. That's one theory. You know, I think...
No, I think there's a lot of merit to that.
I think some of it, too, is he calls them out.
He doesn't care about them.
Yeah.
I have a motto on that. The moment you care what the New York Times says about you, you have lost the ability to lead.
I think that's great. It is
completely true, and he doesn't care.
Huh.
So when people who are used to being, I think that I'm only building on your point. I think, in other words, you've made it somewhat personal. We, the media, are insulted by this man's existence. I think that's true. I think there's a narcissism there. You don't take us seriously? Oh my God, we take ourselves seriously. Why don't you?
Well, I think they see themselves, too, as like the kingmakers, which is the opposite of the role that the media is supposed to play.
Right.
But, you know, and they hate him so much, but you kind of have to be like, yet you gave him such a platform in 16. Everything he did, you covered, and you helped propel him, and now you're so angry that he used you when he needed to, but when he didn't have to. He could go around you, and he had the power to ignore you completely and still beat you. And I think it drives them absolutely crazy.
That's clear. That is clear. Your book is speaking for myself. It's a terrific book. Well, let me just say, watching you in the gladiatorial combat that you were engaged in made you a true heroine in my mind, my wife's, my family. It's an honor to be with you.
Oh, thank you. The honor is certainly very mutual, and thankful that you took time to have me crash in on the fireside chat. Even if we didn't have the fire, we'll have to save something for next time.
Or in Little Rock.
That's right.
Well, God bless you.
Thank you.
All right, everybody. Truly special time with Sarah Huckabee Sanders. This is the Fireside Chat. The compensation of no auto and no fireside was Sarah. And I think it's a worthy trade. I'll see you next week. Thank you for watching this video. To help keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.